Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
This is interesting to me. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. LeBron James was on the Road Trip and podcast. That's Richard Jefferson's podcast. Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye have a really fun podcast. It's called Road Trip, and it goes back to their days when they were on the Cleveland Cavaliers together with LeBron James. So we're all trying to figure out how we get sports back. Kirk Herbstreit's the first one to throw out there, hey, college football season might be in jeopardy. NFL season might be in jeopardy. NFL draft's going to go on. Doesn't matter. Jeff Passan broke the story last night that MLB and the MLBPA had come to an agreement in terms of what guys will make, what they won't make. Will they sue if there's no season? Everyone seems to be planning for the worst possible scenario, which is smart, right? Plan for the worst, hope for the best. You can always fire something up early, but canceling it, that just doesn't look good. Indy 500 pushed back till August 23rd. We'll see what happens at the U.S. Open. Wimbledon, it may be canceled, if not at least postponed. Everything is up in the air. So LeBron was asked on this Road Trip and podcast about the possibility of playing games without fans. Here was his response.
Having a game without fans is just, what is sport? What is the worst sport without fans? There's no excitement. There's no crying. There's no joy. There's no back and forth. There's no rhyme or reason that you want to go on a road and just dethrone the home team because of their fans and vice versa. Like, that's what also brings up the competitive side of the players, to know that you're going on the road in a hostile environment. And yes, you're playing against that opponent in front of you, but you really want to kick the fans too.
Yeah. I mean, look, basketball specifically, the home court environment is special and is kind of unique in comparison. But, you know, baseball has some of it's the same. Football as well. College sports more so than pro sports. He's not wrong, but what is sport? Well, sport is playing said activity against somebody else trying to beat that person across from you. You know, there's been plenty of high school games in inner cities played in front of no fans because of gang activity. This has happened before. And look, here's the issue with LeBron. He is a bright guy. He's not an idiot. Okay? But when you start offering up an opinion on everything, you know, this is the same guy who at first, you know, had said this, if they have it with no fans, I'm not playing. And then he backpedaled on it. And now he's stuck at home like the rest of us. He's also made comments about how, you know, his body was in prime shape. And now he slammed the brakes on, thinking it may take longer for him to get up and ready for the playoffs. Almost sounds like LeBron knows that he missed a window to win a championship because of the possibility of this thing getting either canceled or if they start it back up, starting it up too soon, too quickly after shutting it completely down. But you don't have, believe me, I swear to you, even in my job, you don't have to have an opinion on everything. You just don't. And for LeBron James, who is the biggest name and figure in the NBA, we can argue whether or not he's the MVP or if he's still the best player. We can have that argument. What we can't argue is whether or not he is the biggest name in the sport. That's inarguable, right? As the biggest name in the sport, and especially a guy who has, you know, taken the side time and again to the very, very far left, which would be very conservative, which would be shut it down as long until the last person is cured of this thing. I don't mind if LeBron James in this particular moment just goes, hey, they tell me to play, I'll play because I'm here for the fans. In fact, of all people who should get it, the idea of, hey, I'm Mr. I want to play for the fans. If the fans can't attend the game, but you want to entertain them and take them away from the fact that they can't leave their house or they can't go visit their parents. They can't go out at night. Their kids don't have sports. You know, outside of going and shooting in their own driveway, your kid can't go emulate LeBron or the late Kobe Bryant in a fadeaway jump shot. Like, if you're LeBron James, of all people who supposedly is there for the fans, hey, if the best the fans can do is to watch this on TV, I'll be there. If fans can only follow me on IG and I'll show you what's happening at home, that's what I'll do. And if they open up the gates and let the fans in, we will give them the best show ever. Like, we've gotten into this place where, and I don't mind it. I don't mind if you have an opinion on things outside of sports. That's how kind of I've made my life. I'm a sports fan, been a sports fan since the day I was born. I happen to play basketball. I have an expertise, a PhD in basketball. I haven't played professional basketball. But when I first got into this business, there would be people, oh, you're a basketball guy. Okay, so you prefer somebody who didn't play any sports? I don't understand that. Right? But if you're going to offer up opinions, you have to understand there's going to be the converse opinion, which is, hey, LeBron, really? You don't think basketball is basketball if there's no fans there? It's different. But if it's the best that we can do to entertain your millions of fans worldwide who can't leave their house but could watch you, it actually could be the best thing for your brand. And it could connect you with those fans unlike before. Right? If LeBron James is out there working, he's like, hey, my wife and kids can't even come to this game. You'd start to relate to, man, you know, my wife and kids, we're stuck here at home too. You don't have to have an opinion on everything, but when you do have an opinion on things, understand people are going to critique that opinion. And that's what we're doing here. I don't think basketball, you know, can be played without fans. It's not the same. What is sport? Sport has nothing to do with the fans. Fans add to it. Fans add color to it. Fans make it better. They're like, remember those old BASF commercials? We don't make the pictures. We make the pictures brighter. We don't make the tape. We make it stickier. It was like BASF. We don't make the things that you like. We make them better. That's what fans do. And worse. Better and worse. Right, because there's the Neanderthal fan who curses and yells at a dude and acts like an idiot, gets drunk, wants to fight, right? Like, not all fans things make it, but it does give us color. It does give us, you know, it's sports otherwise could be a little bit more black and white, competing against the other guy. But when you make your life as the world's greatest basketball player of the last 20 years, by your own estimation, right? Remember, LeBron crowned himself in the barbershop in the shop, what was that, 2 years ago? When he said, we came back from 3-1, I knew I was the greatest player ever, right? Because no one had ever done that. So if you're going to call yourself the greatest basketball player ever, that's who you are. They tell you when to play, fans, no fans. Sorry, dude, pack your bowling ball and your bowling ball bag and go and play basketball. Because if you think you're playing for the 20,000 fans or 18,000 fans in arena, 10,000 of those people are not the real people of this world anyway. They're the uber elite rich that can only afford to go in the lower level with the Lakers. The rest of the world watches on TV. Those are your fans. That's who you play for, as well as the ability to compete and show that you're better than the other guy. But I don't mind if he sat this one out. Hey, man, but if you are not going to sit this one out, like the China thing, your argument's going to get critiqued. LeBron wants to comment on everything, but doesn't want the counter comment on anything.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
These two things can exist. Tom Brady is an all-time great quarterback, the most accomplished quarterback in the history of modern football. And Tom Brady is not the same quarterback he was in his prime. These two things can be true, correct? So let's start there. Then let's examine what's left behind with the New England Patriots. Jared Stidham looks like the next man up. Brian Hoyer, who of course has played in this system before, and has then played in a similar system in Houston and other places and come back, is kind of that cagey vet coach slash backup quarterback who can help Stidham. And so this is the mistake that people make all of the time, is they operate under the premise that in order for Jared Stidham to succeed, he has to be somewhere in the vicinity of Tom Brady as a player, right? If the Patriots were 12-4 last year with Tom Brady, well, you take Tom Brady, an all-time great and the most successful quarterback in the history of modern football, off a team, and you bring in an unproven second-year player like Jared Stidham, well, he's going to have to be somewhere in the neighborhood of an all-time great. Otherwise, there's a fall-off. Here's the problem. Tom Brady last year, whether it was because of the offense and the weaponry or because of his own age, he led the league in throwaways. Couldn't move, and when under pressure, and they had some offensive line issues, he just simply throw the ball away instead of turn it over. His numbers paled in comparison to his normal statistics. Generally, it looked like the offense became marginal at best. Remember, they won games based upon their special teams, their defense, and sometimes their trick plays. Now, do I think they can run a bunch of trick plays and fool people into being 12-4? Probably not. I actually believe this league should improve. Was it Bigley? Like, the Jets should be better. The Jets were 7-2 when they had Sam Darnold last year. I would guess that another year of trying to build around Sam Darnold, I don't know if they win 8 or 9 games, but the Jets will be a good team. And the Bills are coming off another playoff run, and they've added Stephon Diggs. So the league, the division, which is generally be considered the worst division in football for the better part of 15 years. It hasn't every year been the worst, but if you took the last 15, 20 years, you would say, by and large, that's the worst division in football. Doesn't mean that it's fair, right? Last year, if you look at the top three teams, they were all pretty good in terms of their record, but it's generally seen as a weak division. The division isn't getting stronger, and Bill Belichick's not suddenly going to become an idiot. Take a listen to what Eli Manning said to Steve Serby of the New York Post. Is the Patriots dynasty over with Tom Brady gone? No, Eli said. I don't necessarily think that. I think they still have a very good team, a great defense, great coaches. Obviously, Tom was a very important part of their success over the years. But I think they kind of have a way, and they have a system that Belichick has implemented there. And I think they'll continue to find ways to have success. But it will be different. Which is what they did last year. Which, by the way, is what they've done for the last 20 years. There's no one way in which the Patriots have won. Right? Early on, it was everything was trying to get a first down with a running back. You know, everything was running back, running back, running back. Then they had the Deion Branches of the worlds and, you know, all of the different slot wide receivers. And then when they had Randy Moss, now it was a big play offense. Now he threw for 50 touchdown passes. They threw the ball deep down the field. And then when they had Gronk and Welker or Edelman, everything was underneath third down option routes. Get rid of it quick. Get to a spot. Get rid of it quickly. Just like the Patriots' offense evolved based upon the skill set of the players and where Tom Brady was in his career, why would Bill Belichick not continue to evolve? You have to start with the understanding that, one, we're never going, even if Tom Brady returned, they're never going to return to the type of consistent dominance that they went through. The AFC East is getting better, right? Like, Brian Flores has a legit plan in Miami, and they're the worst team. The Jets have a legit franchise quarterback. You don't have to like my take that I'd take Sam Darnold for his career above that of Lamar Jackson. You don't have to like that to at least respect the fact that Sam Darnold, that dude can play. And the Buffalo Bills have made the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years. And Josh Allen has only been the starter for 2 years, and now they're adding weapons like a Stephon Diggs to an already super talented defense and a team that can run the football. So the idea that the Patriots were going to be dominant if Tom Brady stayed, he wasn't. But can they continue to find ways to win more games than they should year after year? Why not? Did Bill Belichick suddenly become an idiot? And Jared Stidham does not have to be primetime Tom Brady. Can he be the Tom Brady of last year? And is that good enough to win them 10 or more games? The answer is probably.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, let's get some perspective, shall we? This man has been, essentially his entire professional life has been spent in front offices of the National Football League. He's been a general manager in the league, and he's just a great resource to call upon. Joe Banner joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Let me first get your, I know it's been a bit now, but Tom Brady is a Buccaneer. What was your reaction?
Well, I was moderately surprised, although, you know, makes some sense. I mean, there was clearly something going on in New England that someday maybe we'll all find out about. It seems to be more than just Bill Belichick's a really tough guy to play for. And, you know, if you get past that, I mean, they are a reasonably talented team. They have a coach that I'm sure he has a lot of respect for, probably studied the offense. It's a good offense. It's been very successful in a number of places. So, you know, small market, Florida, that part's really surprising. Getting that close to the end of his career, not finishing New England, that surprises me. But the Tampa Bay part is only slightly surprising.
Does, as successful as the offense have been with a litany of super talented quarterbacks, does it fit the way that Tom Brady likes to play? Because I know he used to hit Moss deep down the field, but isn't he a dink and dunk guy and over the middle guy finding those option route wide receiver, slot wide receivers? The Troy Browns, the Julian Edelmans, the Wes Welkers of the world. I know they have very good wide receivers. But is it because of how he plays that he's never had great wide receivers, or is that just not his style?
Well, I think that was really Bill's choice. I mean, listen, don't mean to drag us into an analytics conversation quickly, but, you know, it's like basketball converting to more three-point shooting. You see more and more teams realizing the easiest mismatch in football is a running back against a linebacker. The second easiest is a tight end on a safety. So we've seen more and more teams understanding that and moving to it. The Patriots were the one that showcased it first. We did it in the years I was in Philadelphia with Brian Westbrook and Jaden McCoy's. So, you know, this is where the game is headed. And I think what we'll see is Arians will mix in some of what he's done historically, but probably put more of that in his offense than we've ever seen.
Joe Banner, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What becomes of the Patriots?
You know, the Patriots are going to be good. I mean, are they going to be as good as they were? Absolutely not. You know, I've had Brian Hoyer with me for a year in Cleveland. Brian is better than people realize. Now, can he stay healthy a whole season? Is he even anywhere near Tom Brady? Absolutely not. But is he capable of running an offense effectively, executing what Josh McDaniels and Bill want him to do? Absolutely. And he's a strong leader and a good guy. And then, you know, they have a young guy that's unknown, and known to them, but not to us. And I suspect if they're doing this, it's true that they have at least some hope for him. So, you know, the offense will be the second best part of the best unit on the team behind the defense, as it was last year. But they've won because both Brady is great and Bill is great. And, you know, I think they'll both still have a fairly decent amount of success. They're not going to be what they were without each other, but they'll still be very good.
How will Philip Rivers do in Indy?
So this is a much more interesting question to me. I mean, boy, watching the tape of Philip last year, it was really hard to feel confident in him.
Yep.
But, you know, every quarterback, I don't care who you are, gets better when the line's giving you protection. You just have a sense of security. And there's nobody in the football better than that, than the Colts. You know, Frank Reich is an excellent coach, and we'll use him really effectively. They've got some young weapons there. Kit Campbell, they drafted in the second round last year, I think is going to be a really good player. Didn't play much this year, kept getting hurt. So I suspect he's going to do very well, and they've also improved the defense. So, again, they're not back to where they were when they had Andrew Luck, but they're a team to keep an eye on, in my mind.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I'm with you. I'm actually a Charger guy, and I know the guys in that front office, and he just – you know, I mean, he was bad. If he personally lost them games. And I get it. If you're not confident in your offensive line, you're gonna, you know, guess a second early as opposed to hold it a second too late. But it was not. There's no way you can tell me he played nearly to the level of a quarterback, which would change in Indy. But we'll see if it was just a factor of a bad year or if he has reached that breaking point in his career. I have my own feelings on Cam Newton. I wonder yours. Where do you think he fits?
Well, he fits on any team that doesn't have a clear starter or any team that is soon to needing a starter. You know, listen, if you want a drop back passer in the old days mold, it's not him. But if you have a coaching staff with the ability to kind of cater to what you need and you're willing to take the risk on health, you know, there's nobody out there, for, in my mind, that has more kind of an upside, an ability to kind of put a team on his back and carry them. And his reaction, I've actually been pleasantly surprised by. It's been kind of a determination, you know, versus a whole bunch of whining. He was obviously disturbed when he first got cut and felt the team kind of didn't reward what he did in his career. And I understand that. I think any competitive person would have that reaction. But since then, he seems to be kind of quiet and focused on getting in the right spot and trying to prove himself, which is, you know, what you'd want to see. So, you know, I think there's a group of teams. You mentioned San Diego. I mean, I think that's one of the teams that should seriously be considering looking at him. And you're going to get a relatively inexpensive look for a year and then see where you want to be. I mean, that upside to me is worth a relatively inexpensive look for a year.
I guess my question is, look, the Bills could use a backup, right? Mm-hmm. The Redskins, and the Bills and the Redskins are made up of Carolina Panthers former coaches have been with them. Yeah. Then I saw Ron Rivera went and made a trade for Kyle Allen. Granted, Kyle Allen makes nothing in money, $580,000 last year. But take a listen. This was Ron Rivera being effused in his praise of Kyle Allen.
Kyle fits what we do. He understands our system. You know, Scotty Turner's our offensive coordinator. You know, we're using the system that we had basically had in place for 9 seasons. And Kyle's a young quarterback. He's had some success. He is good in the locker room. He understands what I'm looking for. He understands what Scotty's looking for. So hopefully we can take that and use it to our advantage with our new team.
Is it possible he just can't mentally get to that point yet where he could be a backup and compete for a starting role? Is it because that's what it felt like there. I'm listening. Wait a second. Who knows the system better than Cam Newton? Who's had more success than Cam Newton? And you can tell me about how much he costs, but now he doesn't cost anything to bring him in. What's your reaction when you hear Ron Rivera, his longtime former coach, instead pick a different quarterback to bring over from Carolina?
So we have coaches that fit, in my mind, kind of two categories in the league. One are guys that just want somebody who's going to execute what they do and do it really effectively. And I worked with Scott Turner for a year in Cleveland, North Turner as well.
Yeah.
And that's their preference. I mean, they like a guy that's, you know, Troy Aikman.
Right.
But their priority is somebody that's just going to take what they're going to execute, what they're going to call, and do it really well. And that isn't really Newton. So I'm not totally surprised that they pick somebody who's much more that kind of a guy. He doesn't have the upside. I'm nowhere near the talent. But on the other hand, they're going to call a play, and he's going to execute the play and probably throw the ball to the right guy. So, you know, I think to me, you know, that's not what the best coaches generally do. But it doesn't make it that, you know, concerning to me that Washington didn't pursue him. Obviously, there are economic issues as well. And they're trying to build the confidence of their young guy as opposed to having him feel, you know, threatened. But listen, Newton isn't for everybody.
Right.
You're going to have to be willing to take advantage of what he brings to the table as opposed to what you're used to calling.
Joe Banner, our guest in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Where's a suitable home for Jameis Winston?
Yeah, this is a little harder to understand because I think Jameis probably didn't realize it a week ago, but probably realizes now he's got to pick a spot and, you know, try to learn and position himself for the future like what a Tannehill did last year. And that's, again, I mean, it's the same teams we're mentioning, you know, includes some of the teams that have an older starter, you know, in Indy, in New Orleans, you know, these teams that have somebody who's probably in their last year or two. You want to go in, work under a really good coach, learn, reposition yourself, and then possibly be right in the position where you can become the starter. So, you know, I'm surprised he hasn't signed now that we got through the first couple of days. And I think we'll see him sign relatively quickly. And if I were advising him, I'd say pick a spot where you can win a coach over, show him who you really are, show him that you're learning, and hopefully a year from now you're inheriting the starting job.
Okay, I want to get into what's going on in Houston. First, let's start. The premise is this. We don't, as fans, and a lot of us in national media, we don't know the day-to-day. We had no idea the rift between DeAndre Hopkins and Bill O'Brien. Did you know that it was to the point that they were shopping him?
Well, I had heard relatively soon before it all happened that they were calling around about him. And listen, Bill O'Brien is a guy that's very feisty and very demanding. And it's, to be very clear, it's not that unusual to find him having some players with his, that he has some tension with. I mean, that's just his style of motivating people. You know, that it reached that point where a guy that's this good that he couldn't manage the relationship in order to keep the guy there and keep part of the team, you know, that's a big failure if that's what happened there. But remember something, they have virtually no cap room. They have virtually no draft picks before they made this trade. And they have a left tackle and a quarterback that are going to be able to demand whatever contract they want to, and if they want to, force Houston to do it this year. So I wouldn't underestimate how much that played into, you know, this happening. But you should never be in a position where you lose a player this tough. By all accounts, he's not a bad guy. You get a superstar player who's at least an okay guy. It's your job to find a way to get along with him and keep him happy with where he is.
Do you think there's any way they move Deshaun Watson?
No, but I would have said that about Hopkins, so don't go to the bank.
Joe Banner, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Who do you think helped themselves the most that we don't, you know, we get caught, I think, in national radio and national sports. We get caught chasing the big names and obviously trying to figure out Brady and Rivers. But you know all of these teams. You know the league like the back of your hand. Who's quietly helped themselves the most?
Well, you know, we touched on it a little bit before. I'm actually going to go with the Colts. Now, I agree with you on we have a question mark on Rivers, but I think he's a significant upgrade over where they were a year ago. I know some people won't agree with that, but that's how I feel. And adding a difference-maker defensive lineman to a defense that was really, really improving and coming on with a group of second and third year players that should really be really emerging that we saw over the last couple of years, what the tip of the iceberg looked like they were. So, you know, I'm going to put the Colts in a category with, even though they only made two major moves. I think we're talking about a quarterback and a pass rusher, a defensive lineman. So they upgraded, in my mind, significantly at two of the three most important positions on the field. So, and they're not in a very tough division. So for me, you know, in terms of looking at how somebody did last year and how much I think they'll be better the next year, I mean, I really like what the Colts did. The second team for me, which may seem very biased, is the Eagles. I mean, they're getting a couple of defensive linemen back from injury. They are at Hargraves, a really, really underappreciated player. And then they acquired one of the best corners in the league, and they still have their first and second round draft pick, and they still have some cap room. So, you know, if Wentz can stay healthy, I think we're going to see the Eagles in the conversation when we get near the end of the season again.
Conversely, Cowboys, they changed out defensive tackles in order to get kind of bigger run stoppers. Now there's, you know, Amari Cooper gets a big deal. And now there's talk of Dak Prescott. Again, no deal signed, but Ed Werder saying that one source says when he walks away, he'll be the highest paid player in football. What do you think what the Cowboys have done?
You know, I've been talking about this. I think we've talked about this before. In Philadelphia, when I was there, we made an art of signing players early. With that comes some risks, obviously, health and performance. But if you want to neutralize the leverage in negotiations, you sign players early. So if we look at what the Cowboys have done in the last three or four signings, all really good players. But between them, they probably spent somewhere between $7 and $8 million more than they need to on an average per year. And, you know, it's just very hard to compete with teams that are doing the opposite. They're creating an extra $7 or $8 million in room because of their ability to negotiate and do deals early, like the Eagles. Sitting there in the same division, the Cowboys are doing the opposite. They're paying people more than they needed to. I'm talking about their own guys. I'm not even talking about going into the market. Just get your own guys done with at least a year left in the deal. So I think the Cowboys are going to be very, very good offensively. I think the overall team is going to struggle to compete to win that division. And if they don't win the division, even making the playoffs becomes challenging.
Joe Banner, longtime member of several front offices, Eagles, obviously the general manager of the Browns, and just a wealth of information. Joe, hope you're safe and healthy. Same to your family. And thanks so much for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
Same to you. Happy to come anytime.
All right, Joe Banner does an excellent job joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's welcome in John Middlecoff, 3 Now's podcast. You want great podcast for now that you're on home detention, right? Three and Out podcast, downloading the Herd Podcast Network. John, how are you?
You know, as podcasters and radio guys, we were made for the quarantine life.
We are just yelling into the microphone and do stuff from our house. Okay, so here's my thing on Cam Newton. Okay, couple things. I don't think people understand the role of the backup is not the role of the starter, and he ain't cut out for the role of the starter. I mean, role of the backup. And he's not there to help the starter get ready. Like, that's not how he's wired. And then I could be wrong. Joe Banner thinks I'm wrong. But when I hear Ron Rivera doesn't want him, you know, I mean, he doesn't want him. Could have had a quarterback, could have waited until he got cut, didn't want him. Buffalo, whether obviously for a backup, they haven't reached, doesn't feel like they've reached out. And Carolina doesn't want him. The guys, people that have worked with him don't appear to want to work with him again. That would give me pause if I'm any of these other teams.
I think that's fair. The number one thing that would give me pause would be the injuries. And if you can't get your hands on his foot and his shoulder, that would concern me. But if he's healthy, you know, and I know you, I saw you were tweeting how the Chargers have no interest. If he's healthy, he's just a better player than Tyrod Taylor. I'm with you. He cannot be the backup. He's not. Cam Newton is not, like, if Jameis, you might have to suck it up and just be a backup. Cam Newton's not doing that next year unless, like, he's on the Buccaneers or something. But to me, like, the Chargers, you got to factor in money, too. Like, is he asking for $20 million or will he play for 1 year, $5 million and resurrect his career?
Right.
And if he's willing to do that, one guy we know that if you get to the right price point, he'll be interested would be Belichick. Like, I bet if Belichick would be like, yeah, I'll take Cam 1 year, $2 million, but would Cam do that? You know, if Cam will just do the minimum just to resurrect and change and get back to being a viewed as a top flight or just a top 12 or 13 starting quarterback, I think the Chargers are the team because, Doug, if they signed him, and let's say he was cheap, he would immediately give them a lot of star power. You know, if the basketball ever happened, the Western Conference Finals, he'd be right there in the, you know, on the court side. Like, he's really famous. Now, is he still good? We could debate that all day long. To me, the shoulder is, talking to NFL people, is the biggest red flag. Even more than the foot is the shoulder. And can he still throw? And he's never been Mr. Accurate. So it's not black and white. It is a very complicated situation.
If you are Jameis Winston, okay, he's got it similar, although he's younger, hasn't had the injuries. He's just had, you know, the turnovers and the off-the-field stuff. What do you do?
Well, I think the difference between Jameis and Cam, like Cam can be a diva or whatever, but it's never been talked about right. Like, he hasn't been arrested. He hasn't been in any trouble. I think some of the stuff with Jameis, like, assaulted an Uber driver, there are just going to be organizations that are no, we're not touching them. Like, no, we don't do that. And I think his market, because of his off the field stuff over the years, that's going to take out half the league right away. There just are no goes on him. And then you factor in 30 plus interceptions. I know Bruce Arians said on some channel that, you know, the reason he's gone is Tom Brady. I thought his comments after the season, whether Tom Brady came or not, they were going to go in a different direction, right? Do you think if Tom Brady had not gone to Tampa, Jameis is still a Tampa Bay Buccaneer?
No.
No, I don't either.
No, I think they put themselves in position to make the playoffs late, and he just couldn't stop turning. He just never was. He just that is what he is, right? Look, it is what he is. He's a guy
who makes bad decision makers.
That's where he's just a bad decision. He's a high risk, high reward. And if the ultimate high risk, high reward coach in Bruce Arians, again, you know, he's ready to move on. I think the rest of the league's like, yeah, that's who he is, and they got the best out of him they could.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't shock me, assuming that everything, we get back to somewhat normal and football starts at training camp, that he doesn't have a team. Now, he will eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been a long starter, but like Cam, once you can start physicaling, he'll eventually probably take a cheap number. He'll find a spot. Jameis, to me, is a massive wild card.
What if, do you sit in Pittsburgh? Do you sit in Philadelphia and be a backup there? You know, Philadelphia, obviously, the idea is Wentz always gets hurt. Or Pittsburgh, where no one, Ben can say, I feel great, but everyone says they're going to recover off of surgery. We've never seen any. He's in his late 30s, makes a bunch of money, but it does feel like Pittsburgh would be the place where they don't have a viable backup.
Yeah,
or do you sit out and wait for somebody to get hurt?
I would not, if I was Philly, I wouldn't mess with him just because the media market, I'm all in on Wentz. I need more of a low-key backup. Pittsburgh, though, does make some sense because Jameis throwing 30 picks. They went 8-8 last year. Hell, they might have lost some of those games. But they can't function without Roethlisberger. It really was incredible last year that they went 8-8 with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. So even with the picks, Jameis is way better than those two guys. Roethlisberger right now looks like the mountain man. Who knows how, he looks pretty big. He's going to need to get in shape.
Over under on Ben Roethlisberger's weight?
I'd put it about 297.5.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
he's a big dude. Like, have you ever met Ben?
Yeah, he probably wears 280 pretty easily, right?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody wears 280 easily, but I'd say he wears 250, 260 pretty easily, and he's wearing, he looks big.
Yeah, and then he has a massive injury where you probably are probably limited for a long period of time what you could do. They say, the beard, when you get chubby, can cover up a little bloat, and it's really hard to tell right now. My thing is just, at his age, with his wear and tear, how could you assume he's going to come back and be solid? That's a huge stretch. He's not like Tom, who's eating avocado ice cream, right? He's drinking, he's eating, and he's weathered. He's been injured so much that there's a chance that he's just shot. I mean, it's just over. And if they start the season with him, which they're going to, and it's that case, and they just got Mason and Duck, they're in big trouble.
What do you think of what the Saints have done? Bringing back Malcolm Jenkins and finally getting that second threat as a wide receiver in Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, Emmanuel's a really good player. The Niners, he helped them win some big regular season games for sure. I mean, he's really, for an older player, I think people think he's injury prone, but he just had one major injury, the Achilles. He's really been really durable. You put him with Michael Thomas, with Cook, with Kamara, with Taysom doing whatever the hell they got him doing, and then Drew Brees, and their defense, like you said, is just solid. The Saints, to me, it's, for the Saints now, a little like the Ravens, they're going to win 11, 12 games. No one even cares. It's kind of like the Houston Rockets. Like, you're judged strictly on the playoffs, and you can't be losing home playoff games. Like, we're all going to put the Saints and the Ravens in the playoffs. They're going to win somewhere between 10 and 13 regular season games. You're going to get judged on winning in January. That's the only thing that matters for those two franchises. And with the, at least the Ravens have a young quarterback. Like, they're down the home stretch here, their Hall of Fame guy. They got to win some games when it matters.
I'm surprised at how quickly the Falcons signed Todd Gurley. It's like, you do realize the Rams just bailed on Todd Gurley, took a big, they're going to have to write a big fat check for him to leave, and then there's still the cap hit. I'm really surprised that they didn't take longer to investigate that deal.
Well, the other thing is sometimes, like in the history of sports, right, you sign the hometown hero that shot just to get some extra fans to the building. They just built a new building in the last several years. Everyone's on PSLs. The fans are coming, right? You don't need him to sell tickets. The tickets are sold.
Right.
So I'm with you. Like, what was the rush? Who are you bidding against for Todd Gurley's services?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not cheap. It's a pretty hefty bill too. They're paying.
Yeah, I would lean not mess with them at all. There's just better running backs you can find for cheaper. Just draft a guy. It just kind of felt like hometown guy, bring him in. I just don't think the Falcons really need that. Isn't their goal to try to compete next year for the division, not to sell seats?
That would be my thought. John Middlecoff, 3 and Out, the podcast, joining us. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Okay, there's this realm of front office guys that you know, and you get a chance to talk to. What are you hearing about Tua? Does somebody trade up with the Lions pick? Does he go to the Dolphins? Do they even want him? Because the Dolphins apparently want Burrow. What are you hearing about Tua and where he'll go?
Yeah, I mean, I heard at the combine that the Redskins were open. Now, it does feel like maybe a little bit's changed. Maybe Ron goes, this first year, we'll try out this guy. We'll bring in Kyle Allen, which for whatever reason they like a lot. So maybe it still feels like a little bit of a stretch for Tua, but if they want to, they're in position to do it. To me, if I'm the Dolphins, I'd be willing to trade one of my first-round picks and probably my second-round pick to get him. I mean, that video of him moving around in the hip, like, looks like he's going to be okay, right? I mean, I think you don't need to be a doctor to be like, he's probably going to be okay. We kind of forget, because of Burrow's season, Tua as a sophomore was 43-6.
Right.
And then this year when he got hurt, he was 33-3. you know, he was a consensus blue chip top two or three pick. If I was the Dolphins and I trade Laremy Tunsil, I trade Minka Fitzpatrick, I can't not get that guy. If the it's all up to the doctors. From what I've heard, the doctors at the combine, again, it was like that 3-month check or whatever, give the thumbs up. But there's unknown. Every team is really, really tight with their medical information. Mm-hmm. So that's not even something when I'm BS and I'm going to get the good information. But from it feels more positive than it does. I haven't heard one negative thing.
Okay, so what about the Chargers?
To me, if I'm them, now I would take a low flyer on Cam. But is it fair to say that they're not going to do that?
I don't think they have any interest in Cam.
So if they don't do that...
I'll tell you that the guy I talked to said, look, he hadn't been healthy, and even when healthy, he's not really an accurate guy. You know, he's a running quarterback who doesn't want to run anymore. And so now he tries to operate from the pocket, and he's not super comfortable there. They feel like, and look, Tyrod Taylor, whatever you think of him, he went to the playoffs when Anthony Lynn was the calling the plays in Buffalo, right? And he has equity there, and he's inexpensive. They got to re-sign. They're gonna have to rework Hunter Henry's deal, his franchise tag now, and they got Joey Bosa that they're gonna do his deal early rather than late. I think their preference is to save money. They think they're fine with Tyrod and draft somebody.
Well, I think they can stay at 6, assuming the Dolphins like Tua more, and whether they stay at 5 or trade up to get him, I think Justin Herbert will be there at 6. Now, they could get, you know, try to outthink the room and take a tackle at 6 and then try to, you know, mortgage some future things because they do have so many premium players in the peak of their career. Could they trade up with a second-round pick and next year's one if Jordan Love is falling? You probably could risk that, but the safe move, and they were, you know, he tore up the Senior Bowl, and they were obviously at the Senior Bowl just watching him, unlike, you know, Burrow and Herbert that are underclassmen, Tua is, that, you know, I think he'd be a good guy that Tyrod could start right away. I'm not the biggest Tyrod Taylor guy.
I'm not either.
Their team is good enough that if he had to start half the season, you'd probably be in good, decent shape and let Herbert learn.
What have you been watching?
I mean, I can only watch so much Tiger King. I've stumbled upon some NBA TV throwback to my youth, like Charles Barkley, like the most underrated NBA player of all time?
Yes.
He was so good on the Suns.
Yes.
Stupid.
Yes. People forget how, I mean, he was... I mean, if you think that Zion's dominant, go watch Charles Barkley. More dominant, better all-around player at about the same size, doing kind of similar things. Wow. And that should be the goal for Zion. Zion obviously does more of the defensive end. But, yes, MVP of the league, and it, you know, maybe there was some Jordan fatigue, but he was an incredible, incredible player. And because he didn't win a championship and because, you know, he'll take the jokes about it from Shaq, I think somehow he gets diminished. He was unbelievable.
And then the mayor of Sacramento, Kevin Johnson, man, he was an explosive athlete.
Ooh.
I mean, God, ooh, he could. So I watched some of that. I watched some of these throwback Super Bowls. I ended up on the Tampa Bay Raiders Super Bowl.
Oh, I was there.
How often did San Diego in the Super Bowl loop back in the day? Like every 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the stupidity of not building the new stadium for the city.
And then they throw up the graphic during the Super Bowl. One of the most underrated trades in NFL history. A coach, John Gruden, 2 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, and $8 million in 2001, so plus inflation. Think of that happen. He went for more than Hopkins and Diggs combined.
And the Raiders still didn't. It got worse with it because their picks were so terrible.
I know. They missed on all the picks. Ultimately, was it worth it for Tampa to trade all that for the Super Bowl? I kind of leaned yes, but that was a lot to give up.
Awesome stuff. John Middlecoff, 3 and Outs, the podcast, on Facebook as well. Middlecoff, thanks so much for joining us.
See you, Doug.